All right, folks, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Kabbalah of Character. This is our fourth lesson. So tonight's topic is all about love, all about learning how to love and how to be loved. Plus, I have an extra special edition for you all tonight, which is we're also going to be speaking a little bit more about Daat. I know some of you felt like, how can we skip over Daat? It's right there. Boom, it's right on the chart. So we are going to start by discussing that. Okay, so I think, give me a second here. Perhaps more than any other topic, love seems to be a pretty popular topic. Think about it. Think about music, art, literature, jokes, right? Jokes. Okay. Tons of jokes about love and marriage and all and relationships and all that stuff. So the point is like this. Love is a very tough thing to get right. So the goal tonight is going to be to learn some Kabbalistic wisdom on what it means to love and what it means to love in a healthy fashion. So that is the goal. That's the main objective tonight. Like I mentioned, we're going to throw in some additional, some words about that as well. And, of course, our overall objective, as you know throughout the series, the objective is to learn personal improvement, personal empowerment tips and tools from the Kabbalistic map of the human personality, a.k.a. the chart of Sfirot, which is also called the chart of the 10 soul powers. So the more we get to know the healthy template of what a human being is and who a human being is, what and who a human being is, the more we get to know the healthy template, the more we can strive to live up to our highest potential. So let's begin by quickly recapping the two intellectual powers that we focused on, which are Chachma and Bina. So does anybody need a chart? I have so many charts. Charts for miles. Charts for days. Charts? Charts? Everyone's got charts? I'm selling charts in the street. Charts? Kabbalistic charts? Okay, who needs a chart? Program, get your program. Okay, so the chart, you need a chart? Sidri, you need it. I'm going to give you a chart, oh my gosh. On the contrary, you're making me happy. I have so many charts. Okay, here we go. Take a chart. Take two. Okay, so we are picking it up with the three intellectual powers, Chachma, Bina, and Daat. Chachma, we explained, is creative intelligence, creative wisdom. Chachma is seeing new things, seeing, catching a glimpse of the soul's wisdom. What is Bina? Bina is understanding, but Bina, we said last week, is really how you see the world and how you see information. Right, so Chachma is catching a glimpse of the wisdom. Bina is how you see that, how you see the idea, how you understand things, how you see the world. It's the intellectual framing, it's the intellectual attitude, it's your spin, it's your angle, it's your slant, right? That's where your intellectual attitude comes in. That happens in Bina. So what is Daat? What does Daat bring to the table? So here's a very quick and accurate definition of Daat. Daat is... it's not catching a glimpse of your soul's wisdom. It's not how you understand something. That is what you choose to focus on. What you choose to focus on. That is really important when it comes to the intellectual experience. Okay, that, how do we know this? Or where do we see this? So the first time we find the word or a word related to the word Daat in the Torah, in the Bible, is when it comes to Adam and Eve. It says, man, Adam, knew Eve, and she conceived, and she gave birth to a child. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm sure you know a lot of people, right? Yes? Yes? How many Facebook friends do you have? Right? I got a bunch of Facebook friends. I know a lot of people. I don't know a lot of people. Right? So the Torah says, Adam, the Adam, and the man, Adam. Adam was the man, no. So Adam, the man, Yada, et Chava Ishto, knew Chava Eve, his wife, and then she gets pregnant and has a child. Cain, Cain. Unbelievable. So, obviously, the Torah is speaking in a euphemistic fashion, right? A euphemism for intimacy, physical intimacy, is knowledge. Is that. Is yada, that. Is this word, that. But why? I mean, you would think that the euphemism should somehow match what you're alluding to, right? If it's a word, if it's a code word, you're not going to use a random word. It should kind of fit. So understand this. That, when it comes to the intellectual arena, is exact, well, not exactly, but is similar to what it's alluding to in the euphemistic sense. Let me explain. That is intellectual attachment, cleaving, connecting. It's an intellectual intimacy, if you will, with a concept. Again, Chachma is catching a glimpse of something new and something really incredible. Bina is how you understand it. That is choosing what you are focusing on, what you're connecting with, what you're attaching with, and what you connect and attach with, that becomes integrated within who you are. So again, Bina is an expression of how you understand something, but that specifically refers to the experience of connecting yourself with an idea. So for example, meditation, where you're connecting mindfully with an idea, to you're connecting with it so that it becomes part of you and one with you, so that it moves you and you feel something about it, that experience is very much tied into that. It's also tied into Bina, because how you understand it, right? Bina is the flavoring. How you understand it will certainly affect that experience. But that at its core is what you're choosing to connect with. In other words, that is attachment, connection, and intellectual intimacy, in the sense that you're becoming really close with an idea. So that also represents what your mind is attracted to, in the sense of what you're going to focus on. There's a lot of information out there. There are a lot of ideas out there. What do you choose to attach yourself to or with? What do you choose to connect with? What are you connecting with right now in this moment? What are you thinking about? Or, as we'll discuss a little bit at length, what do you choose to put in front of your eyes? What are you interfacing with? What are you connecting with intellectually? Right? What are you putting in front of your mind's eye, if you will, or even your physical eyes that then feed information into your brain? That refers to that. And therefore, here's a big idea. That is an intellectual attraction. It's intellectual attraction to certain ideas and themes and topics and ideas. It's how your mind is liking, enjoying, and connecting with a certain idea, a certain set of ideas. And at the same time, at the very same time, rejecting other points and other ideas. In any intellectual experience, your mind will be gravitating to think and focus and connect with certain ideas, and to move away from and not be so excited about and distance yourself from other ideas. So that is therefore, in a sense, an attraction, and it's the opposite of intellectual repelling, right? It's the opposite of moving away from something intellectually. It's connecting with something intellectually. Therefore, does this make sense so far? Yes? Yes-ish? Okay. Therefore, that is known in Kabbalah as the emotions of the mind. That is known as the emotions of the mind. Why? As we'll discuss tonight, the first two basic emotions, which on our chart are Chesed and Gevura, that's the next step down, next tier down, Chesed and Gevura, they are synonymous, Chesed and Gevura are emotionally, with attraction and revulsion. So that which you're attracting, and revulsion, I know is a strong term, but work with me here. Chesed is attraction. It's close. And Gevura is distance. Right? It can be translated as awe or as fear. Okay, think of it this way. You see something you like, oh, I like this. You get closer to it. Something is frightening or scary or distasteful, you step back, you move away from it, right? Assuming that this is where it is, either you're moving closer to it or you're moving further away from it. Chesed and Gevura, we'll talk about this when we get to the emotions in just a few minutes. But here's my point. That within the mind because that is still an intellectual experience. That in the mind is the hub of the emotions of the intelligence. It's intellectual emotions or emotive intelligence, however you want to phrase it. But the point is that that is the mind's attraction to certain ideas and the mind's moving away, revulsion if you will, from other ideas. So that is where you connect deeply, closely, and intimately, again, euphemistically, intimately with certain ideas. That's what that is. That is, you and the idea are intertwined, if you will. Again, and that's why euphemistically, that's why that is used in the Torah, in the Bible, in that way. So that, therefore, is called in Kabbalah a mafteach. Anybody know in Hebrew what a mafteach is? What's a mafteach? Huh? Key. Mafteach is a key. That is a mafteach, is the key that unlocks the emotions. That in the original Kabbalistic Aramaic language, it says it's the mafteach, the kolel kol shis. It's the mafteach. It's the key that includes all of the six emotive powers, excluding malchut, which we'll speak about all the way in the last lesson. But the six primary emotive powers, chesed, gvura, teferet, netzach, chod, and yesod. Those six. Good evening. Those six are included, perfect, are included, not included, they are, well yeah, they're included, they are powered and almost generated by that. And here's a simple way to understand it. That is what you focus on, and what you focus on gives rise to your emotions. I'll give you an example. Let's say you are not a sports fan, okay? You don't care about sports. Give me a sports team. What are we into nowadays?
The Braves.
The Braves. How are the Braves doing?
Well, they're probably postponed tonight.
Yeah, they probably are. Are they playing here?
Yeah.
Okay. Who knows? Maybe it's clearing out for them. So, the Braves. Or what about Atlanta United? I thought somebody said Atlanta United. Everyone's into the soccer now. It's like sweeping the city. They're good at marketing, right? Oh my gosh, I bought my kid a shirt, so it worked already. I put down my $20 for it. Yeah, legit. Okay, so we have we have to choose one. Oh, so difficult. No, let's make it less complicated. Let's choose one of the two. Let's say the soccer, because it's the new team. So you're not into soccer. Yeah, you didn't catch the whole wave of this. I know it's football somewhere, but it's soccer here, so it's cool. So right, I get it. Hey, my car has a South African flag on the front, right? That South African flag in South Africa, it is definitely football, right? It is not soccer. But nonetheless, here it's soccer. So you're not into it. You know that it's kind of like a big thing, but you're not into it. And then suddenly, Atlanta United, they get so good that they're going to the playoffs. Are they in the playoffs? Help me out here. I haven't been following it.
Still going on.
That's the right answer. That's the best answer.
A lot of players in the game that they're playing, European team. Like, they have a lot of really great players. They have the goalkeeper for the American Olympic team.
See that? They're awesome. Now here's the interesting thing. Let's say they're doing really well. And then it starts hitting the news, and I know it's hit the news already, but let's say it gets more coverage, and it's in the papers, and it's in the magazines, and it's in billboards, and suddenly your eyeballs, you're seeing more and more of this Atlanta United stuff, and let's say they're in the playoffs, and they're doing well, and then they're in the championship, which is probably not called the World Cup, because we just had that, but it's called something else, and it's the American version of the championship. By the way, funny, my wife always tells me, Americans, they're so into themselves. They call a baseball North America thing the World Series. Are you kidding me? But yeah, that's how it works. Anyway, getting back here. Because the World Cup, she's like, the World Cup is legit.
They call it cricket where she comes from.
No, well, yeah, that's all, well, sort of, kind of. But you know, her point is, look, football is legit. It's World Cup because everyone's included, right? This is not the World Series. Anyway, I totally digress. But here's where I'm going with this example. No, this is not all digression, just bits and pieces. So, but you're starting to see it more, and you start focusing, and you start maybe watching game, and listening to coverage, and listening to the sports talk about it, and reading up on the stats, and before you know it, you start caring about it. And you didn't care before. You see, you really didn't care. You didn't care. You knew they existed. You knew other people were into it, but you actually didn't have an emotional connection to the team. You didn't have, you knew about it, intellectually, theoretically, conceptually, not even theoretically. You knew they were real, so it's not a theory. There was a concrete knowledge of the existence of Atlanta United. You knew the logo, right? You knew that whole thing. You knew it. You saw it, but you weren't into it. You didn't have an emotional reaction to it until dot. Until dot. Dot is when you focus on something. And the more you focus on it, the more you pay attention to it. That is paying attention to something. That is intellectual intimacy. You're becoming close in mind to that thing. The more you focus on it, that is focus, and connect with it, and attach yourself intellectually with that thing, the concept, the idea, or in this case, the sports team, the more that you have, the more it builds an emotion. And suddenly, you scream out of joy when they win. And you might be a little heartbroken if they lose. They're not going to lose. We know that now, right? We know that because we're all into it. But the more... You with me on this? Yeah, you've ever had an experience where you weren't into something and then other people were into it and you started paying attention? That is paying attention. You started paying attention and then the next thing you know, you start caring about it. Facebook. We're live on Facebook. Yeah, it's like, yeah, whatever. And then you start paying attention. The next thing you know, oh, I like this. So here's the thing. Kabbalah says that is the mafteach, the kol kolshes. It's the key that contains the six emotions. It's the key to the emotions because it's also emotive in nature. Right? That's what I was saying before. Why is it the key to the emotions? Because it mirrors the emotions in the sense that it is intellectual attractedness. It's intellectual or attraction. It's how the mind is attracted to something. The mind is cleaving to something. It's grabbing onto something. It's connecting with something. And now you begin developing an emotional response to that. So that is connection. Chachma is seeing an idea. Bina is how you understand the idea. All of that is still theoretical. It's like an idea. I understand it. I can explain it. Do I care about it? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have the way I understand it. I care about how I understand it. But do I really care about it? Not necessarily. But that is when you and the idea become one. It's when you connect with it. And when you connect with it, now you begin to develop.
So that's like having skin in the game.
That is skin in the game. Straight up. That is skin. But it begins with the mind.
Right.
It begins with the mind caring. And then now you're invested. You did, and you, sometimes you don't even know how it happened. But you just started paying a little bit more attention. And the more that happened, the next thing you know, you're into it. Yeah?
Is the connection also like a personal connection based on I identify with this thing, I have something in common with this thing, or this thing can do something for me, you know, or, you know, like an ego. It seems like you take ownership of it because you feel like you're on the same team.
It could be, but it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. Okay.
I'll tell you this. That works in a crazy way. It could be something totally not relevant to you, and then you can care. The royal family. I said it. I have nothing in common with the royals. But if I'm paying attention, huh?
You don't?
Well, I didn't want to say this. However, no, I'm kidding. I got nothing after that.
Another Kardashian.
Right, exactly. Oh, that's a great example. That's a great example, right? It doesn't matter who it is. The point is like this. Let's say the royal, let's stick with my example, the royal family, right? The royal family. I don't have any connection with the royal family. Seriously, like what's the connection? But, and by the way, if someone's not paying attention, there was just, they just had a chasana, right? They just had a wedding. Yeah, I'm saying, right, they just had a wedding. If you're not paying attention, you might not have even known it happened. You might not have known that it happened. But if you're paying attention, if you have your dot, if you're focusing on it, then the next thing you know, it's like you care. Oh, like what did she wear? Oh my God, I didn't know she was wearing. It's like, oh my gosh, I feel so close. Really? Yeah, I do. I'm not speaking in. I know I'm speaking in first person, but know that it's a modified first person conversation right now. Okay, does this make sense what I'm saying? Yes? Yes? I feel like the royal family is really like, it's really a personal thing here. Right? Right? So, what is it? Oh, sure. Yeah, I got plenty. I love these charts. There you go. All right. I don't know if you could tell. Okay. So, questions, comments? Yes.
So, there's an emotional component to this. So, how can you differentiate between it being an intellectual attraction?
Ah. Good. It begins with it. No, it's fine. I mean, you got an extra one? Yeah. Okay. I'll keep it for reference, just in case I forget what's next. I'm kidding.
Can I ask that before you answer it? Because
yeah.
Yes,
it's how you understand it.
Put them together, but you could be leaning more towards being subjective or objective about the topic you focus on.
Correct. You could be more subjective or objective. I would say like this. Why is it not straight up an emotion? Why is that not just an emotion? Because at the point of pure dat, it's still more of an intellectual curiosity than a full-blown emotion. Your heart is not beating yet about the wedding. You're not waking up with like, oh my gosh, I need to live stream this because I actually care. It's more of a curiosity. And then you begin caring. I want to also speak about this in the negative sense. Okay? Because this is really important. This is really important. Okay. So sometimes you might notice that you're feeling unhappy, anxious, you know, sad, and other sorts of negative emotions. Here's what I want to say. There's a lot of toxic information out there. And I know that sometimes it's necessary. Some things are necessary. I get it. But there's a lot of stuff out there that is actually, it's so negative that it can begin to have a negative effect on us and make us actually emotionally and even physically put us in a bad, like in a negative state. So my advice for somebody that's feeling not so happy is to ask the first step is to ask the question, what information are you consuming? Is it positive information? Is it negative information? I always say this, you probably heard me say it a million times. Turn on the news. When I was a kid, it was 7 o'clock. Then it got to 6 o'clock. Now it's 5 o'clock. I don't know. I stopped at 5 o'clock. It's 4 o'clock now? Okay. Now it's 4 o'clock. And now, you know, I grew up in the 80s, whatever. It's the decade. I don't think, I could be wrong. Were there 24-hour news cycles then? It was not. Like, certainly not today.
It started at the end, but not near the beginning.
CNN was around, but it wasn't like so.
At the end.
Okay, and this is, and by the way, this is not about anything, you know, anything at all related political. This is not anything anyway. This is just, you turn on the news. Again, I don't typically watch news, at least, you know, just randomly watching the news for this reason. It's because, you know, you watch it and it's like, tonight, they scare you. Tonight, it's like, oh God, what happened tonight? It's like fire breaks out, and then there's this murder, and this stabbing, and this potential abduction, and this thing, and that thing, and it's one after the other, terror and disaster and horror.
If it bleeds, it leads.
If it bleeds, it leads. Right?
And even when it's
if it's bad. Jews, it's news. I'm kidding. That's another one. Hey, I don't know. I just felt like saying it. So here's the thing. How can you feel? If that's what we are focusing on, if that is focus, that equals focus, it's what you're focusing on. That is not how you think, it's not what you think about it. That's Bina. Bina is how you process it. That is simply what you are connecting with, what you put right in front of your brain. If we're putting in front of our brain all of this horror and terror, I know it's out there, and I know we have to be careful and protect, fine. But that should be such a big thing. There is no way that it's not going to take its toll on our souls. And when I say souls, I mean on our emotions. On our psyche, obviously, directly, but also then on our emotions. And then on our physiology. There's no way that it can't. That is the mafteach. That is the key to the emotions. That is connection. What are we intellectually connecting with? I'm waiting for the news channel that talks about the teacher that spent time with the kid after class, to change and change the kid's life. And the person, I'm waiting for a channel that speaks about, look, I firmly believe this, that most people that you and I know, most people are good people. And most good people do good most of the time. I know exceptions happen. Yeah, we're all human. But most of the time, good things are happening. Isn't that a little bit healthier to focus on? Not that we can't speak about the other stuff. We should know. We should be informed. I get it. But that, again, it's like planting, right? It's like planting. You have a garden. You're planting tomato seeds. You're going to get tomatoes. You're not going to get cucumbers. You're going to get tomatoes. If you want to plant one, if you plant tomato seeds and you're hoping to get cucumbers, yeah, it's just not going to work. What are we connecting with? We're connecting with negative stuff, and we're like, how come I don't feel good? Right? If the first thing we do in the morning is open up the thing and see the latest disaster, and it's one after the next, right? The latest disaster that's befalling our world, right? If that's what we... There's time for that also. But if that's the first thing in the morning, then we are just setting ourselves up for an angry, negative, depressed, anxious anxiety. We live in a world today, in a society, I can't say world, at least I know society in general around here, America, etc. Atlanta, America, whatever. Right? There's more anxiety, there's more emotional stuff today than I think, you know, back in, you know, when, and there are many different reasons that we can posit for that. But I will tell you this, if we look at this Kabbalistic chart, and we say, okay, if I'm not feeling right over here, what's the key? Well, it's right here. That is literally called the key. It's called the key. Mafteach, it's a key. It's the key to the emotions. And you want to feel better here? What are you thinking about? And it's not revolution. It's not like, oh my God, what do I need to do? It's so simple. It's instead of thinking about the negative stuff, think about the positive stuff. Think about the beautiful stuff. Think about the... Also, okay, you can also think about the negative stuff a little bit. But the positive... Even the negative stuff, if it's thought about in a productive fashion, it's okay, how can I be an advocate for change? Whatever that is, how can I make a difference? You know, I know somebody who they decided, you know, based on whatever it is, that they're going to run for public office. And she won recently, locally. And it's incredible. And she, so whatever it is, but it's got to be positive if we want to feel positive. Look, if a person wants to feel negative, no problem. I mean, I would say it's a problem, but then that's where your dot is, I guess, designed to be. But otherwise, we have to be careful. Does this make sense? Yes? Yeah? So again, chachma is a glimpse into the beyond, a glimpse of higher wisdom. Fine, that's chachma. Bina is how you understand, as you process information, how you understand it. Wonderful. That is what you focus on. And that's a choice that you and I make. Sometimes, you know, you're driving, billboard, it came to you, fine. But more often than not, we are choosing what information, what stimuli we put in front of our eyes, what we think about. We are choosing. That's why it's really, really important to choose to put, again, if we want to feel a certain way, if we want to feel healthy and positive, then it's important to put those healthy and positive things in front of us. Cannot plant cucumbers, tomato seeds, and hope to grow cucumbers. That's not how it works. So here we come up to another definition of what it means to be a mensch. Before we get there, let's read a text. Cade, please read text number 2, page 92. Here we go. I'm going to check. There's a lot of Hebrew words here, but just read it, please, and then I'll translate and explain that it's basically everything we just spoke about. 92, text 2.
That sustains and energizes the minute. It compromises Hesed and Yevora, that is to say, love and its offshoots, and awe and its offshoots.
Okay, so thank you. This comes from a classic mystical text, Book of Tanya, and he says like this, that, which is the intellectual power that we're speaking of, that sustains and energizes the midot. What are the midot? Midot are emotions. Midot are literally emotions. So that sustains and energizes the emotions. It's made up of chesed and gvura, love and awe, which means that is attraction and rejection. What you focus on and what you're not focusing on. So you're choosing to focus on something that is attraction within intellect. You're choosing not to focus on something else that is rejection with intellect. By the way, they tell a story. Ooh, this is a good story. This is a great story. I know I'm setting myself up for a great story, but it's a great story. Huh? Rejection. It's distance, rejection, boundaries, space. It's all synonymous, though. It means a gap between the two parties. By the way, next week, the whole session is on Gevura. So there's a ton on Gevura, which is absolutely amazing. Okay, here's the story. So, okay, here we go. There was once a chassid, a disciple of a great mystic, who went to his teacher, the mystical master, and he said to him, I am having trouble focusing on my prayers. In other words, when I pray, I find that my mind wanders and I get distracted. So what advice do you have for me to be able to focus better on my prayers? Yeah, it's like a, yeah, however long the prayers are, but just to concentrate better, etc. So the rabbi said, that the teacher said, go to the house of so-and-so, and he will give you the answer. Okay, so he travels a distance. It's in the winter. He's traveling a long distance. He finally reaches the edge of town in the forest. It's always in a forest, or it's not, but it could be. So it now is. And he reaches his fellow's house, and it's late at night, and the light's on, and he knocks on the door. He's waiting to be welcomed in and get the answer. And there's no answer. And no one answers the door. So he knocks louder, and there's no answer. And he goes around the side of the house, and he looks in the window, and he sees the guy is there. Knocks on the window. No response. Pounds on the door. No response. He is freezing. He's got a coat. He's got boots, right? It's Russia. He's got the gear. You know, he's all geared up. But it's still freezing. He can't get in. He resigns himself to sleep on the porch. So he sleeps on the porch. Whatever porch it is, right? By the front door. The next morning, the balabas, the owner of the house. Oh, good morning. Welcome in. Oh, you're sleeping outside. Come on in. Make yourself at home. Take off your boots, right? Have a warm bath or warm up in the fireplace. Some breakfast. And he's very thankful, is the guest, the traveler. He says, eventually he musters the courage to say, what happened last night? How could you not have heard me? Did you not hear me when I knocked on the door? How come you didn't let me in? He said, because you need to learn a lesson. No one can come in to your house unless you open the door. No one can come in unless you open the door. It works the same way for our minds. Nothing can come in unless you open the door. You are in control of your head. You're in control of your mind, of what comes in. We cannot say, well, I don't know, I was just browsing the news and now I don't feel good. It's a choice that we make, what we put in front of us. I'm not anti-news. I'm just anti-negativity and like stuff that's anxiety filled. That's what I'm not keen on, right? So what I'm saying is like this. You're a balabas. You know what balabas means? You're in control. You're the owner. You're the master of the domain. A balabas, you're in control. You're in charge of yourself. Everyone's a balabas over themselves. You're in control of your head, of your eyes, of your mouth. You're in control, right? If you don't want to see it, don't look at it. If you don't want to hear it, turn away from it. Right? That's the way it works. So don't let it in. Now we have our first definition of a mensch for tonight's class. What is a mensch? Who is a mensch? Someone who's in control of their senses and focuses on what they want to focus on and turns away from what they don't want to focus on. So if it's positive, if it's healthy, if it's important, if it's necessary, maybe if it's not so positive, but it's necessary, fine. Yeah. They focus on it. If it's not, they turn away from it. This is how Dat in text number 2 has both Chesed and Gvura. It's attraction. It can connect to something and it can reject something. It could say, no, thank you. I'm not buying. Not interested. Not interested. I understand that others might find it important. I understand that those that need to know about it need to know about it. But for me, I'm going to focus on something else. Instead of starting the day on a negative note, how empowering would it be to start off the day with prayer and meditation? Right? Something positive and uplifting and meaningful to get in touch with our own soul, our purpose, and then we can start the day and roll into whatever it is that we roll into. But we're starting the day with our dat focus. Dat is also focus, concentration, connection. It's what we're, where our mind is. Our dat is in a healthy place, and the rest follows. Make sense? Yes? Okay, yeah.
What about trauma, and what about PTSD?
Yeah, so trauma is where something is inflicted upon a person, and they certainly have no choice about it. That is a major exception to this discussion. We're talking about in a classic situation, what I call classic. And it, one second. In a classic situation where a person has the ability to choose what it is that they wish to connect with and information that they wish to take in, in a case where that is forced upon something negative, traumatic, devastating, hurtful, harmful, abusive, etc., is forced upon a person, that obviously goes outside of this discussion right now. What I'm talking about is the areas, the aspects of life, and hopefully we have many more of those than the opposite, God forbid, that where we do have the balabatishkeit, that's a form of balabas, that's the ownership of our experiences, and we have the ability to choose mindfully where it is that we're going to put ourselves. How to deal with trauma and how to work around it, I feel like that's a much bigger discussion. It's a critical discussion. It's a bigger discussion. Maybe we'll find a good place to talk about it in the context of this series. I'm going to put some time to think about that. I don't see it fitting directly here, and I'll see if I can, if there's a good place for it in the context of the next, we have 4 more sessions, so I'm going to try. Yeah.
Just one quick question.
Sure.
So, talking about dot and focusing.
Yes.
That's not talking about obsessive focusing, just focusing.
Right, right. Now, obsessive focus would be to where that totally consumes one's life to the point that they can't see almost anything else. Now, if it's positive, I guess it's positive. I mean, you can have too much of a good thing. If it's negative, then it's not positive.
So could Bina help not understand that obsessive focusing, that intellectual?
I guess, but it requires really stepping out of one's own mind and being able to be aware of the obsession itself. Right, it's about being aware of it, where I think if a person's in that state, they might not even have the clarity of vision to see that they're stuck in a place of obsession. You with me? Like, I feel like that's the catch 22 there. Yeah, that's the vicious cycle. I'm not saying there's no way out. I'm saying I theoretically Bina could help a person out of that. Theoretically, like that's stuck.
Yes.
Right? It's almost like a record that's just stuck in the same place. Vinyl's back in, by the way. Everyone should know that. I'll say it again. Vinyl is back in. I even bought. I know this. I feel like I need to speak about sound for a second, as an audiophile. So, or whatever. I may or may not have just recently.
What is
the
thing you call
vinyl? You know, it's basically. It's basically if you took an MP3 digital file and then made it real and then in a circle and then stretched it and then just carved lines into it for no reason.
You can do that with a 3D printer.
Actually. Right? And then it's kind of like challah that you roll out and then don't bake. Kind of like matzah. But instead of the holes, it's circles. It's all the kids are into it. It's crazy. You couldn't relate to it. Also, cassettes are back. Do you know this? I'm not joking. I may or may not have just purchased. I'm saying, I feel like, I know we're live on Facebook. Whatever, it is what it is. But yeah, I may or may not have just recently purchased a Bluetooth cassette player. Because it's cool. You can make a mixtape. It's so... But literally, not like a mixtape digital file on... What's it called again? On Spotify. No, this is like legit. This is an actual... You got to hit rewind and wait. It's like, oh my God, really? It's going to take me 3 minutes to rewind this thing. I'm doing it now with my kids. I'm getting them into tape. So recently, all of this is true. I'm not making up a thing. Trust me. And so recently, the little one got into the tape. There was a cassette on the floor. It was on the thing, and it's now on the floor. And then guess what happens? Old school. I'm like, that's why we got rid of you. That is what, not to the tape I said this. Hold on, slow it down, everyone. To the tape I said this, that's why we retired you and moved on to other media. By the way, as bad as tape is, I feel like I need to speak about this just for a moment. Just, this is a break, this is mental calisthenics in between the intellect and the emotions. It's okay, we're going to get to chesed. We'll talk about love soon. Okay, CD. Whoever came up with CD, worst idea ever. Okay, you buy a $20 DVD back in the day, the next thing you know, right, people are handling it, it gets a scratch, there it goes, out the door, nothing, you can't play it, it's finished, that's it, that's all I have on it, super scratchable, that's it. I get it, records are supposed to scratch, the CD, no, and DVD, that's the same, it's the same physical concept, right, a little scratch, optical thing, a laser can't read it, and then you're done. All right, I'm done with this rant, finish. Tape is the future. So, yes.
I kind of get what you're saying.
About what? Vinyl, tape, or CD?
All of those. And, you know, Nakamichi was the friend at the time. But in any event.
I'm more of a techniques guy.
Well, I am too. Nak is the best. I'm concerned a little bit about when you say, well, we have to put everything in a positive spin.
Yeah.
And all that, and that's all great. I think that's terrific. But there's a world out there.
So listen, here's what I'm saying. I don't feel comfortable telling anybody what they should or should not pay attention to. That's a personal choice. What I'm saying is, you should know you can choose what you put in front of you. That's my message. My message is like this. My message is, you are the balabas. You are in control. Never feel like, just because someone else is putting it out there, that you have to consume it. Never feel like you have to open the door if someone's knocking. You don't. The telemarketer calls, you can hang up. Don't be rude, but whatever. I'm just saying, right? So you have the ability. It's your mind. And know this, what you put in your mind is going to affect the rest of your being. So tread carefully with that. What a person, if a person feels like, I need to know what's going on because I need to be informed, I need to therefore advocate and make good moves and decisions, call it a vote. No problem. I don't have any problem with any of that. What I'm saying is, if a person feels like it's killing them, it's hurting them, it's harming them, I want to at least give another paradigm where we are in control. We don't have to focus on the stuff that we don't like focusing on, and we can make different decisions in mind. And that's my point. My point is not to tell anybody what they should or should not watch or listen to. I'm just saying that I've seen this where people that are consumed and consume negative information, the dot is focused on the negative, I've heard this from countless people, they don't feel good. They're not feeling good, and it's hurting them. And my message is, okay, let's think about where this is coming from. And it's such theoretically an easy shift. It's just a shift of a focus and attention. It's just not focusing on this stuff, focus on that stuff. Pull out a sefer, pull out a Jewish book. You know, go to a Jewish website. At least start the morning with that, and it'll set the course of the day differently.
But I still have a little trouble, and I buy 100% what you just said, but I still have a little trouble with the fact that the rest of the world is not there.
Yeah.
But there's going to be shootings and so on.
No, listen.
You don't have to necessarily.
I'm not saying be ignorant and don't put yourself and protect yourself. Do what you need to do. What I'm saying is, if there are things and stimuli and things that are getting us down, we have a measure of power and control over that. And let's understand what that is and how that works. So, this, in short, this definition, let me just wrap this up just a half a second. In short, this definition of being a mensch, the dat definition of being a mensch is someone who is not a slave to the emotion, which means that a mensch can mindfully A mensch realizes that emotions are born of intellectual focus. If you cut off the oxygen to the emotion, if you stop focusing on the idea, the emotion will go away. This is true with fear, anxiety, sadness, etc. Yes.
So I think to the point of, you know, you want to be an informed citizen or whatever, there are unpleasant things that occur, you need to be informed, aware. You certainly have a choice as to A, the source of where you receive that information, who you let it know, and B, you have a choice about the modality. And it's been shown in neurological studies that video is far more powerful than reading something out of the book.
Right.
And so you have a choice of modality.
How to consume.
How you take it in and what the source is of whatever the information is that you are taking in. So you do have a choice in that. Even though I agree, you know, I need to be informed. There are a lot of things I need to be informed about. But I have choices about both of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a lot of... Look, this topic, I feel pretty strongly about. It just, in general, I don't feel strongly about any, like, controversial... I feel strongly about the notion that I believe that if we did studies, we could find a connection between, in general, negativity and emotional well-being amongst the populace. I don't think there's a question. But I think it's something we don't think about because it's out there and everyone does it and whatever. Again, the message here is, it's your dat, it's your mind, it's your heart, it's your emotional health, it's your psychological health. You are in control. It's about reclaiming control over all of that as you wish to reclaim control. Let's move on to, I need to tell you guys, okay. Remind me after the class, off camera, off mic, off everything, to tell you about something that I can't even tell you what I'm going to tell you about. Okay, yes. Interesting.
So
what's the focus on? Right.
Burying her head in the sand,
right.
What's going on in the world that she's trying
is it against or is it advocating for?
For
exactly. And that's what I mentioned before in passing. You can have the same cause and the same thing, but let's make it productive. Let's make it right. There's different ways to do things, etc. It's all about, look, I care about my well-being. I care about your well-being. And what I'm saying is that you have the power for your own well-being. This whole course is about getting to know us inside, from the inside out. This is how we work. This is literally how we work. This dot is the key for everything else. So let's not take this lightly. Let's move on to chesed and love. Okay, so chesed. First emotion is chesed. It's, again, everything on the chart. It reads right, left, and then center below it. So the first emotion after the gap, right? The gap between intellect and emotions. So we have now the first emotion, which is chesed. Chesed, I explained before. Chesed is attraction, right? Dat is intellectual attraction, like chesed of the mind, okay, whatever. But chesed itself, which is an emotion of the heart, chesed is attraction. Let me give you, in my opinion, a very good definition of chesed. Chesed is a feeling of closeness and a desire to get even closer. That's what chesed is. Chesed feels close. There's a pull. There's an attraction. And chesed wants or moves you to want to get even closer. So chesed is like a magnetic pull, right? Pulling you towards something. Whatever that thing is. It could be a thing, an idea, right? Intellectually, that, right? An idea. Or it could be a person, right? It could be a cause, whatever. Chesed means you're attracted to something. There's a magnetism, there's a magnetic pull. Now, gvura on the other side of the coin, right? The other side of the pole, the left side, gvura is the opposite. Remember those really powerful magnets?
Yeah.
I tried to remember what they were, like metal, I guess they were magnets, magnetic. And they, maybe. Those are the really powerful ones, though, right? Those are like the almost dangerous ones. Yeah. Remember they used to have those little balls that were magnetic? And then they took them off the shelves because, like, it was dangerous for kids to swallow them?
Right.
Yeah, those bunky, those buckyballs, or whatever they're called. Anyway, but yeah, they may be a little bit more. I'm speaking about the ones. I mean, it doesn't matter. But the ones that are that were kind of like longish, maybe kind of like a rectangle, kind of flat. So you have it in one way, they're pulling together. You turn one of them around, and they push back. So chesed is the magnetic pull towards something. Gvura is the opposite. It's the magnetic push away from something. So something that you don't like, something that you fear, something that's too big, right? Something that you're in awe of, you take a step back to behold. All of that is gvura. You go to the Grand Canyon and you take a look and you're like, wow, that's gvura, that's not chesed. You're being wowed, it's that awe. You take a step back, that's gvura, right? Chesed is attraction. It's closeness. It's feeling close and wanting to get closer. So that's what chesed is. Gvura is the opposite. Chesed is also most of the time synonymous with, of course, love. Love is also a feeling of closeness and a desire to get closer.
That's what chesed or gvura?
Chesed. All chesed. I may have at some point I may have misspoken. I don't know. I don't know if I did or not. But yeah, chesed is the attraction. It's the closeness, it's the love. Gvura, which again, we'll have a whole class on Gvura next week. Gvura is the opposite. Gvura is where the magnets are pushing away from each other. It's the distance, the separation. It's not the closeness.
So when you're not interested in something?
Yeah, it could be Gvura.
The Grand Canyon is not
a... Well, when I say the Grand Canyon, I mean anything that you're in awe of, that you step back to take a look at. You might enjoy it, but it's kind of like it's distant. You're attracted to it, but in a distance way.
You're going to cover this next week, though, right?
Yeah. We'll talk about it next week. So, let's focus on chesed. So chesed is love, it's attraction, it's closeness, and wanting to get closer. That's why I always like to say this. And I say this, because I like to say it. Because I'm chesed, I'm attracted to saying this. But here's my point. Sometimes in a relationship... Okay, so here's the thing. The lifeblood of a relationship is the act or the pull to get closer. Are you with me? No? I'll say it again. So what gives a relationship, what gives love its energy is the action of getting closer. If you're already close, then where are you going to go? You with me on this? You can't get close. So like if you're already there, so where are you going to go? So the chesed, the love doesn't have energy to it because it's you're already there. So that's why sometimes in a relationship, people can create a little conflict to create space to then need to get closer again. Are you with me on this?
Yes.
Because chesed, the lifeblood of chesed, is the coming together. It's that pull. That's the magnetism. That's the magic. That's the excitement. That's what gives chesed and love and attraction. That's what gives it its magic, is that wonder of feeling close but not fully there yet and wanting to get closer. It's like the magic, the allure, the wanting. That's the magic of chesed. So in a healthy relationship, there are always moments of getting close and then getting close again. Right, it's not static. Where okay, well, we once got close, and now I guess we're just with each other. That doesn't have the energy of chesed. Chesed as an energy is getting close together. Now, that's what chesed is like. That's what chesed, attraction, love is on an energy level. How does it play out in action? So chesed in action is kindness. Doing an act of kindness or an act that expresses one's love for the other person. There are different ways to do this, but they're all the same. They all fall under the same category if they are about bringing you closer to that other. So if it's about bringing you closer to the other, so if it's a gift, if it's words of affection, if it's touch, whatever that is that's bringing you closer together with the other person or with the other thing, whatever that is. So that is an act of chesed, an act of love. So chesed in energy is attraction and wanting to get closer, feeling of closer, wanting to get closer. Chesed in action is doing something that is an act of love. Now, healthy chesed cares about the other. In other words, it's about getting close to the other and not about consuming the other. Healthy chesed is about getting close to the other, but not about consuming the other. So healthy love is you love the other, which means that you feel close. You want to get closer, but not to the point where you totally destroy the other by swallowing the other, by consuming the other, right? That's obviously not getting close if you're totally destroying the other. If the other doesn't exist anymore, then that's not getting close to the other. So understand that embedded and inherent in the experience of chesed is maintaining the integrity of the other as a distinct and discrete individual or thing. Are you with me? Does this make sense? Which is why the very notion of somebody saying, I love chocolate, makes no sense. What are you doing to the chocolate?
You're attracting and bringing it closer to you.
Yeah, until you destroy the chocolate and you've eaten the chocolate and it no longer exists. That's not love. That's devastation to the chocolate.
But if something melts, you know, in front of you, isn't that a form of love?
Yeah, sort of, kind of. Now, hold on one second. Let me get back to my chocolate. So, we'll talk about something else. So, this is a story. I don't know if it ever happened, but it's a story that's told in Jewish circles, scholar circles. The story goes like this. There was once a yeshiva, a Jewish academic center. And one of the students in the yeshiva, so they were having lunch on campus, and one of the yeshiva students was eating the lunch with a lot of gusto. Gusto, right? Maybe there was broccoli, maybe asparagus, but this young man really enjoyed the fish. Ah, there was a salmon, or what else? What's another good fish? Tilapia, yeah. There you go. Little carp, little gefilte. By the way, gefilte fishing, the easiest. You've heard this. You've heard me say this before, right? Gefilte fishing. Oh my God, gefilte. So easy to identify. It's all those fish with the carrot on its back. And it's also super easy to get them because they're stuck in the jelly. It's like, I can't move. So you're like, I got a jar. Easy peasy. Bonk. Can it. All right. Moving along. Wait, hold on. Let me finish this thing. The story, because this is an actual story that's told that I don't know if it's real, but it's an actual possibly fake story. But here we go. So, here's the possibly fake story, but it's a really good story. So, this young man, he's eating fish. He's really happy with his dish. I did. And. So, one of the rabbis comes down, one of the teachers, and he sees this young man, and he's going at the fish. He's like, do you love fish? He's like, I love fish. He's like, you don't love fish. If you loved fish, you would be feeding fish and caring for fish and preserving the fish, and not that way of preserving the fish, right? But keeping fish alive and tending to fish, right? You would not be eating the fish. That's not loving fish. You don't love fish, he says. You love yourself. It's a message about love. Because if love means that you consume the other, you did not love them, and you did not want to get close to them, you wanted them to unexist. You just like yourself. You just wanted to get close to yourself, and a way to feel good about yourself is by consuming the other thing. That's not love. Well, that's not loving the other, that's loving self. Two different types of love. So what I'm saying here is the Kabbalistic understanding and definition of chesed love means that there's another entity that remains an entity. It exists. It doesn't disappear once you love it. It's there. Which is why healthy love needs healthy boundaries. Right? You're not them. Like the Kutzker Rebbe once said, Rebbe Nachum Mendel of Kutz said, if I am I because you are you and you are you because I am I, then I am not I and you are not you. However, if I am I because I am I and you are you because you are you, then I am I and you are you, and now we can have a relationship. Don't ask me to say that again, because I can't. The point is like this. If we are distinct individuals, we have our own identity, and I want to get close to you, and hopefully you want to get close to me, but we remain who we are, and there's a process of closeness and the ebb and the flow and closeness, then you have a healthy dynamic for relationship. And you give to the other, Right? Chesed, I said the emotion, the energy of chesed is the closest, the attraction, magic. But the action of chesed is giving to the other. As they are, where they are, doesn't mean taking from the other. That's not chesed. You see, chesed is not, oh, here I got something. That's not chesed. That's not, I love you, therefore I'm consuming you because that tastes good for me. That's not what chesed is. That's not what love is. That's taking. That's self-love. That's not love. Love is, I'm attracted, I want to get close, and I am giving to you. If I'm giving to you and I'm taking from you, if I'm giving to you to take from you, or if my giving is really not giving, it's taking, then it's not giving and it's not chesed. It's not love. So what I'm saying is like this. I know love is complicated, but Kabbalah tries to give us clear definitions of what it is and what it's not. Do you respect the person as an individual? Are you attracted? Again, not only on a physical level, but emotionally, intellectually, spiritually, on every different level, corresponds to the four Kabbalistic worlds, which we can talk about another time. But are you connected on many different levels? Do you have that attraction? Do you want to get closer? I know I'm speaking about human relations right now. Then we can call it the energy of chesed. Do you give to the other? Not do you take from the other. Do you give to the other? That's an act of chesed. That's an expression of chesed. All of these are aspects of chesed. Chesed is not fish love, i.e. eating the fish, because I love fish. You don't love fish at all, right? Chesed is not chocolate love, right? It's not like, oh, I love chocolate, I ate a whole bar. That's not loving chocolate. It's loving the taste of chocolate. I'm not saying you shouldn't eat chocolate, right? Chocolate's fine. What I'm saying is it's not, we use the word love so all over the place. It's important that we know, that's the purpose of one of the purposes of tonight's class, that we have a clear definition of what love is in its pure sense and what it's not. So love is not about consuming. It's about giving. It's about connecting to the other. Take a look at text number 3, page 93. Sarah, please read this one. Text 3, page 93, from Psalms. You got the Hebrew in there also. It's awesome. Yeah, so King David writes, the world is built with chesed. I know we built this city with rock and roll, but we built this... I feel like sometimes I got to give time. However, although we built the city with rock and roll, we built this world, or at least God did, with chesed. Chesed is the ultimate foundation of reality. Why? Because before the world was created, there was no other... God could not love, because how can you love when it's just you? Who and what do you love when there's nothing else to love? If love means a closeness to an other, you need an other. So God, the whole premise of creation, according to some Kabbalists, many Kabbalists, maybe not the ultimate reason, there's other reasons, but one of the major catalysts of this whole existence, this whole thing called the universe, life and existence, is love. God wanted to connect with something other, so God created other to connect. God wants to connect with us, wants us to connect with Him, etc. But again, the healthy form, so that's just a general kind of universal statement, text number 3, about the foundation of reality. And it's really not just about a foundation of God's reality in the universe, but if love is driving the entire enterprise of creation, the manifestation of all 10 sefirot, all of these powers which are at the fabric of creation, the DNA of existence, if they're all almost predicated on chesed, then maybe that also gives a message for us as we live our lives to put chesed as a focus. Again, there are different forms of chesed. You can love a cause, you can love... But it's about connecting with something, giving to something, respecting it for what it is, and connecting. It's a beautiful thing. Yeah.
In Hebrew?
Yeah.
It's Ahava.
Ahava, yeah.
Where does that come from?
Why is that different than chesed? It's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think you can probably semantically draw some distinctions between the two. But I think in a general energy sense, chesed and Ahava, it's all sort of the same. I don't know of a clear distinction. You know, is Ahava... I don't know. Like, it was one the emotion and one the energy. I don't know. In Kabbalistic terminology, we call it chesed. I think that maybe chesed is a little bit broader than ahava. But chesed, ahava is love. Chesed is more of like, it's a little big. I think it's a little bigger. I think it's a little bigger. Usually ahava, you talk about a human being. Whereas chesed, I feel like chesed can be, you know, when you give tzedakah, you give to someone else, you help support somebody, you give a job. So chesed, I feel like, is a little bit broader, but I don't know if that's accurate. That might just be my way that I think about it.
No, I just wanted to learn about
it. Okay, awesome. Of the ava. Oh, nice. Perfect, perfect. Good.
No?
Good, 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 good. Okay, so that's a little bit about chesed. Now let's talk about...
What about chesed?
Chassidim, yeah?
Well, the same root.
Yeah? Yeah. It's related, sure. Chassidim. I like it.
You like being a chassid.
Yeah. A chassid, yeah.
So I have a question about, so that I've been sitting here. So in Genesis, the creation story,
yes.
So God makes man, takes the rib, makes the woman,
yes.
And the two became one flesh. So
yes.
How does that tie to...
Oh, so the commentaries say, how do they become one flesh? Number one, through Adam knowing Eve, whatever that means, who knows, right? Right, so that's in one, the closest that two human beings can come together, right, is that, right, it's pretty close. And then you also have the notion, some commentaries explain that verse in Genesis to say that how do they become one flesh in the children that they have, so they become, the DNA becomes one flesh in the progeny. That's what some say. I don't know. Different opinions, different places. But again, the key point here is about understanding the difference between... okay, look. If love is an energy flow, so Kabbalah teaches and emphasizes, it's really important that we have the flow in the right direction. The flow of energy of chesed, love, is from within outward. It's radiating out. If we call love an energy that's reflecting back in, it's distorting the love energy field, right? It's an exact opposite. If like, you know, I love because I'm trying to get something, then that's a whole, then why is that called love? What's going on here? That's not, why is that love? Love is about giving. Love is about, it's extending out. It's about getting close to something that you love and respect. It's about, this is here, I'm here, but I want to get closer. That's the energy of it. If love is, oh, I like eating chunk, I like eating the fish. It's like about what I'm getting. I don't even know why we're calling it love. It's not even a thing. It's not, it's totally the wrong, it's the wrong thing. It's a getting, it's not giving. So love is giving, love is the energy. Okay, now let's move on. So how do you, so now we get to some trouble. Why do I still get this in trouble? Because it seems like the Bible, the Torah, is way too demanding when it comes to love. Now that we know what love is, take a look at page 95, text number 6. Leviticus throws us the old curveball. Bend it like Beckham. Boom. Atlanta United. I know he doesn't play on that, but whatever. Okay, I'm working on it. I remember when he was in the LA Galaxy. Galaxy? Did I get that right? LA Galaxy? Yes? Yes, yes, yes. Okay, text number 6, page 95. Bill.
Love your fellow as yourself.
Okay, classic Leviticus verse about love. Why do I feel like that is not necessarily the right... Yeah, I guess that's the right chapter and verse. Okay, so love your fellow as yourself. Love your fellow as yourself. So now we have a problem. Who's your fellow? Who's your fellow? Define fellow. I'm asking. Define fellow. Okay, friend. What? Other. Human. Mankind. Okay, listen. If you say fellow means someone that you love, do you need a verse? Like, feel close to someone that you feel close to? Do I need a commandment? Come on. If I'm already attracted or feel close or given to the other, right? All the definitions of love that we explain. So you need a verse to tell me to do that? I'm already doing that. Like, I don't need that. So what's the message here? Commentators explain, love your fellow as yourself, someone you've never met, and the nudnik. You know what a nudnik is? Oh, the nudnik. The nudnik who does the thing that annoys you. That's the annoying, yeah, that person, love. Now, let me explain a nudnik. So there's the Shlemiel, the Shlemazel, and the Nunnik. Let me explain these Yiddish terms. Okay, the Shlemiel is the one who's carrying the hot soup and is clumsy and spills it. The Shlemazel is the one who always gets the soup spilled on them. And the Nunnik is the one who says, what kind of soup was it? Right? Why is that relevant? Right? So you have the Shlemiel, the Shlemazel, and the Nudnik. So it's the Nudnik, always the Nudnik, Newman. So it's always the Nudnik that is harder to love. So the Torah says, love your fellows yourself. Someone you've never met, someone that you've met, and right? So love your fellow as yourself, even the person that's annoying. So how do you do this? So now we have a problem. Because if we're left up to our own love devices, to get it right is difficult because half the time we're thinking about ourselves when we allegedly love, so we're dealing with that first definition of love or the core definition of love that I just explained, and that itself takes a lifetime of work to get to a place of loving truly and actually and altruistically the other person and not being self-obsessed and self-interested and that the love is self-reflective. That's a lifetime of work, avodah, work on ourselves to love in a pure fashion. So that's its own thing. But now you're telling me, oh, guess what? We've upped the ante. What's the ante? Or how we're upping the ante? Now you have to also do that to someone you don't know or someone that bothers you. Someone's a little bit annoying. So, them I should also love? Come on. Really? What is this? What is this? The Bible or something? So here's how we understand this. How do you develop a love for the other, your fellow, open-ended like that? And Kabbalah teaches there are two approaches. One is the meditative approach, and one is the action approach. In other words, very simple. If you want to break it down schematically, right? I feel like I'm a football coach here. I feel like Madden. So if you break it down like that, I'm bad Madden impersonation, but I'm working on it. Anyway, I'm no Caliendo, but that's a guy who does it. But okay, so let's get... It's a thing. Let's get. It's a sports thing tonight. This is all sports, all the time, huh? The Kabbalah of athletics. So, if you break it down like this, we're trying to arrive at a place where our emotions are in a healthy place, and we're talking about love. So, how do we get love? And I point here because it's where my heart is. I think so. I think it's around here. So, how do we love our fellows ourselves? So, use two. There are two ways, two methodologies. One is by using a meditative approach under. Here's what I want to say. Look at the chart. Look at the chart. Always follow the chart. So simple. So love. How do we get love right? Ooh. It's either by using here or here. In other words, it's either using the mind or the action. That can help get the emotions where they need to be. It's either above it or below it or after. Preceding it or following it. What? So let's talk about the meditative approach. Here's the meditative approach. And I need to preface this with a question. Here's the question. Why is it that when somebody calls you out on your flaws, criticizes, even points it out, you get so mad, even though you know it better than they do? Think about it. You might know, you do know, everyone knows their flaws, right? You know it better. You think you know my flaw. I know this flaw. I know how I've been dealing with this, you know, my whole life. I know, you know, how it's gotten me in trouble, etc. Like, I know this one. And I'm okay with it. But the moment you say it, I get offended. Why am I offended? It's not like it's not true. Like, if you made up something, I can understand the offense. But I know it's true, and I still get offended. Why is that? Why do I get offended when you say it, but I know it's true?
Because it's the level of closeness, and it strikes at your vulnerability.
So here's what Kabbalah says. Kabbalah says like this: you know your flaws, but your flaws don't, in your own mind, your flaws don't define you. You see, you know that you have a flaw, but yeah, I could work on that. No big deal. And in general, overall, I'm a very good person, right? Everyone says, I'm a good person. And if I wanted to, I could totally change that also. But it's still, you know, tomorrow I'll change it. But it's not a big deal. I know it's a flaw, you know, it needs to be worked on, but it's like it doesn't overwhelm, it doesn't overshadow the goodness of who I am. That's how I see my flaw. In other words, I see it, it's a faint flaw, and even though I know it's important, but it doesn't overshadow my essential inherent goodness. Here's the problem though. When you see my flaw, you've reduced me to that flaw. Right? You're not defining me by the flaw. You don't see my inner goodness, and I know you don't see my goodness because you've never told me how good you think I am. All you've told me is about my flaw. So that's the only, I know, I can see on your face that the only thing you're thinking about me right now is not how good I am, the goodness that I've done, and my potential, none of that. You're reducing me to my flaw, and frankly, that is offensive. I know I have the flaw, you know I have the flaw, but you don't see the other stuff, I see the other stuff. That's the difference. That's how Kabbalah explains it. So what does it mean to love your fellow as yourself? To do the same thing for the other that you do for yourself. Are you with me? Just like you see your flaw in context, can you do the same for someone else? Do you only see the other person's flaw, or do you see the totality of their being, including their inner goodness? That's what it means to love your... Are you with me on this? So how do you love your fellow as yourself, just like you love yourself with and despite and in addition to all your flaws? Because you know you're a good person. Yeah, I could work on this and I could improve that. And I, of course I can. But I'm a good person. Right? That's our narrative for ourselves. Okay, that's fine. That's a healthy narrative. It's healthy to have self-love and not to totally beat yourself down. That's totally healthy. So then, if you can, in a sense, compartmentalize, if you can look at things and understand their place and how big they are and how small they are and what's really important and prioritize on that level for yourself, you can't do that for someone else. Why not? You have that skill, so do it for someone else. Love your fellow as yourself. It doesn't mean you don't see their flaws. It means you see their flaws, but you also see their inherent goodness. So how do you love your fellow as yourself? He said, well, how do you love your fellow? They're so annoying. Wait a second. Hold on. I can't say this. I'm also annoying in certain ways, right? I also have my annoyances or whatever, things out of, but I know that in addition and outside of all of that, I know that there's still a preponderance of good inside. And so loving your fellows yourself, the meditative approach is to say that just like I have that inner core of goodness, so too does the other. Now, this is not only helpful for the stranger or the nunnik. This is also helpful for those that we are in close relationships with. What I mean to say is that this approach is very helpful, and I would say I think it's even necessary to truly love those who we have pledged to love or those who are counting on our love. Which means there's certain people that we love by default, almost. You know, if we're married, so we love our spouse, obviously. And we love our kids, and we love our parents, and we love our siblings. And there's certain relationships by definition, people that we love. But the question is, have you really thought about it, right? Do we really love, or are we in the modality of loving without a conscious effort to love? And that's where Kabbalah tries to elevate not only the stranger relationship, if you will, but also the close relationship and take it to another, to a much deeper and higher level of love. You see, love can be reduced to a, like I mentioned before, love can be reduced to a very pragmatic consideration. Yeah, I love you because X, Y, and Z, because you do these things for me and I do these things for you, and it's like kind of like a contractual arrangement. Therefore, I love, but I don't actually feel the love. I just say the love, you know, and I act like the love, but it's not really a thing. Kabbalah encourages us to actually meditate and contemplate on the fact that we really and truly can love the other person. And if you really think about it and work on the deeper elements, the love can be elevated to a much deeper level. Not only that, but a love that begins on a more superficial level, like I mentioned before, it could be that a person can love someone not for them, but on the contrary, for oneself. Right? I love you because I feel better with you in my life, which is about, it's not about the radiating this way, it's about radiating this way. It's to me now, right? So that love, Kabbalah says, is not doomed. The love can be redirected over time and matured to a point, to a place where it really becomes about the other person. So let me just explain for just a minute or two about how this works. But I think it's really important to understand this core notion. Somebody says, I love you. I love how you make me feel. I love you. Give me purpose and meaning in my life. Every morning I wake up, I feel alive with you in my life. All of those statements, the professing love, are all about self. Right? I want to sing your praises from the rooftops and how much I love you. You make life worth living. Right? Okay, that's still about self. That's chocolate love. Right? That's fish love. That's self-reflected love. So how do we mature that love? Again, the meditative approach is not only for the stranger, it's also for the one that we are in a relationship with already. So how do we really love the people we love? How to love the people you love? That's the title of this brief segment of this class. How to really love the people that you love. You say that you love them and you act, you know, you're working together and stuff and family stuff, but how do you really love? So there's a way to mature the love. But it's important to get to a place where you really appreciate them for who they are and for their inner spirit and for their divine spirit inside. Take a look at such a beautiful text. Yaakov, please read this one. Page 96, text number 9, from Rambam, Maimonides, who was, Maimonides would not be, I don't think he would proclaim himself as a mystic, and yet, look what he says here, text 9.
Physical factors terminate, causing the end of that which was conditional on them. But when the cause of the love is godly, the love does not cease.
He says something that is so fundamental to a healthy relationship. If it's predicated on something physical, on looks, etc., it's going to necessarily change over time. And that which you thought you loved, maybe, possibly, you might not love that element longer. That element certainly changes. I always say this. No one ever looked the same age 5, 15, 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, 75. No one looks the same throughout life. It's not a thing. Physical stuff changes. But if you love their divine spirit, if you love their soul, if you love something deeper, something that is eternal, then the love never wavers, never disappears, never changes. This is how you can have a situation where somebody, remember the notebook? Yeah? Right? The notebook? I think, huh? We're all on the same page here. I'm talking about a writing thing where you put notes in. Are we all talking about the same thing? Right. The fellow who has his wife is aging. Yes? Is this it? Huh? And he unconditionally, he's there by her side. And he tells her the stories of their life. Yeah, is that it? Am I getting this right? The plot right, more or less? How do you have such unconditional love? He's not getting anything from it. He's just giving. He's not getting anything. Okay, I don't know all the details, but what I don't remember all the details. Or
giving to her.
It's not about him. It's heartbreaking, but it's so pure. That's why it's so emotive or emotional, because it's so pure. By the way, when you and I see purity, it typically evokes emotion. When you see purity, right? I know many people have seen, I don't know in this room, but in general, many people have seen the documentary of Mr. Rogers, right? Has anybody seen that?
Yes.
In this room? Yes? Yes? Did anybody get a little bit emotional?
Yes.
Yes? There's something emotional, at least to me, about Mr. Rogers. There's a purity. I don't know him, you know, when I was from Pittsburgh, so there, you know, that's one. I'm from Pittsburgh also, just so you know, in case no one knew. So, I feel like he, someone who's very pure, very, like, very true, very honest, very giving. It wasn't about what he was getting. It was very much about giving, and he was there for kids and honest. He respected kids. He spoke to kids like human beings. He didn't speak to them. He didn't patronize. He didn't tell them Baba Mises. It was all Baba Mises, something like fantasy story. It was all real. It was all grounded, real conversations. He could speak directly to kids. Didn't frighten them, but just honestly, just for them. It was pure. It was pure giving. Pure giving makes us, and sometimes, like, overwhelmed with emotion, because, like, wow, that's real. That's real giving. So much of our lives, it's a game. It's like, okay, I'm giving, but I'm getting, and it's a strategy, and it's a machination. How do I get it? It's all a spiel. Yiddish, that's for Yiddish for game. It's all complicated. It's all strategy. Pure ahava, pure chesed, pure love, pure giving is beautiful to behold. It's majestic. Where does it come from? Maimonides tells us it's about recognizing the divine core inside. Do you see the other person's soul? Or do you see their body? What do you see? You see the physical stuff? You see that stuff changes, it comes, it goes, whatever it is. But you see someone's spirit. You want to give to them? That never disappears. That's eternity. That's love. That's literally eternal. That never disappears. No body factor, not changes in body, not even the passing, which is the separation of body and soul. Nothing changes that love. That love is absolutely eternal. And the giving is eternal. And the connection is eternal. The second approach to love, because I know you're still waiting on that. First approach is meditative. You go above the emotions. And the second approach is below the emotions. Very quickly, it's about doing the things, acting in a way of love. So, like I said last time about happiness and Bina, we talked about the pencil exercise and smiling and forcing yourself to smile and you feel happier. This is about acting in a way of love, and then that can stir the emotion of love. So you hold a door for someone and you speak pleasantly to someone and you do the things that you would do. If you love them, if you acted like you do when you love someone, even though you don't feel yet the emotion, you may just find yourself getting into the emotion. The last point of the class, which we don't have time to focus on, but I just want to mention it, is the Kabbalistic concept of friendship. So friendship, I think, sometimes is overlooked. We live in a world where we have more friends than ever, but we also have less friends than ever. You know, we have digital friends and whatever, and I get it, and it's you know, maybe for the kids it's a different form. The kids. No, whatever. Get off my lawn. Yeah, whatever it is, but joking. Don't have a lawn. I have a lawn, but you know. So here's the point. The point is that friendship, I feel like, can be an area of life that's neglected. Today's class is not only about romantic love relationships and, you know, maybe children and parents and that sort of thing.
It's
about straight up. Do you invest in your friendships? Are you there for the other? Right? Are you there unconditionally, it's just for them because you value them and you value your friendship and you're just there for them and they're there for you. But you're there for them. Don't worry about the other stuff, right? You're there for them. That's friendship. It's so important to go through life with friends. Again, we live in a world where there are more friends, but it's shallower than ever. So this is about creating space and time. It's hard. It's really hard. It's really, really hard. But to have friendships. To have friendships. And you can have friendships with your spouse or with a loved one, with a parent, with a child, with a cousin, with a brother, with a sister, of course. But it's also good to have friendships in general. You know, in addition to family and relatives, it's good to have friends. Friends are there for us because we're there for them. That's the way it is. You're there for somebody unconditionally. They're there for you unconditionally. And it's a beautiful thing. You go through a difficult time in life and people are there for you. It's really good to have that sort of support system. And I know it sounds like I'm saying invest so that you get back. And that's, how's that love? It's self-reflected. I get it. That's not why you're doing it. But it does help. It does help because you have those bonds. Because you've been there unconditionally for that. If they sense that you're only there because you want something out of it. It's like, hey, buddy, can I borrow your car? It's like, whatever. It's like, that's the car borrower friend. Like, right? That's that friend that's always, you know, having the thing. But being a friend is like investing in the relationship. It's really being there for the other person. When you're there for the other person, it's honest and it's true and they're there for you and it's a beautiful thing. So that's how we're gonna conclude the class. And I want to mention, because I didn't stop by each point along the way and talk about, okay, definition of a mensch. After that, I stopped pointing it out, but let me go through it right now. We have four or five different points about what it means to be a mensch. You can write these down if you want. I'm going to go through them point by point. Number one, to be a mensch. Today we spoke about dat and chesed. So to be a mensch, number one, control your focus. Control what you put in front of your eyes, in front of your mind's eye. Control your focus, and you can control your heart. Control your dat, control your heart. That's point number one. Point number two, love always includes giving space and respecting the other. If you love someone, you will give them space and you will respect them. You will not wish to consume them or consume them. You'll give space and respect to the other. Okay, love, by definition, is loving the other for who they are and not for what you get out of it. It's loving them and not loving yourself. It's loving them for who they are and not loving them for what you get out of it. Giving, true giving. I said chesed is loving, the energy is attraction and closeness, and the action is giving. Giving, the true definition of giving, the only legitimate definition of giving, is giving to give without the expectation of getting in return. It's not about the expectation to get. Of course, you should be getting if both parties love and are given to the other, so it works both ways. But the pure action, the pure modality of giving is giving without expectation of return. And the final point is act nice even when maybe you don't feel so nice. Act nice even when you don't feel nice. Thank you very much for joining me tonight for our fourth session of the Kabbalah of Character. I hope you loved it. Thank you very much.